right. So, we are dealing with really getting to the end of the story of Joseph, really. A little ways to go, but compared to where we've been, not too much longer. Probably we'll go to Moses next. And that's, of course, the story of Moses. It's a fascinating story and a lot to be learned from him himself, looking at his life, and then just that part of history as well. So we'll be looking at that after Joseph. And so, but we have a little ways to go with Joseph, but it is starting to get to the end. In fact, what we'll look at tonight is probably the most dramatic part of the whole story. And so if you remember, we were the place where they have, the brothers have come back to Joseph, and everything goes really better than they could even imagine when they appeared to him the second time. And it just really, it almost, from their perspective, it would almost border the bizarre that this Egyptian leader would treat them in the way that he did. He was so very kind to them, as I've been saying, treated them like family in a lot of ways. And so now they're on their way home, and you can just, as we turn over to chapter 44, you can just imagine what their conversation was like as they were leaving. As we'll see, they weren't able to get very far before they were overtaken. But as they started to leave, they had to be overwhelmed with joy. Everything, again, they have Benjamin with them. They didn't lose Benjamin. That was the great fear of Jacob. They certainly didn't want that to happen. Simeon is back with him, and they have the food that they came to get. And can you imagine them just thinking, I can't wait to get home and tell our father how he treated us. This great, powerful Egyptian even had us into his home. And then he fed us from his own table. And can you imagine them saying, you know, Dad gave your boy Benjamin five times as much as everybody else. And they were happy. They rejoiced. Right after that, it says they ate and married. No resentment at all. And so have they changed a little bit over the last 20 years? Seems like they have. And you really be able to tell as they continue to talk about Benjamin and describe him and their attitude. They know he is Jacob's favorite. Like, he probably, with some of the language that we read here in this text, Benjamin was probably closer to Jacob even than Joseph was. I can't remember exactly how it is stated. We'll read it here, but Judah says that their lives are bound together. And Judah knew that, so all the brothers knew that. And again, there's not any trace of resentment in that at all. And so they have changed. They have mellowed, it seems, over the years. And I think we have to start concluding that they're just better men than they used to be. And we don't know how deep and some of the things that are happening to them right now, their incarceration for 3 days and all of that, that may have something to do with their changing. They can be even right now in the process of changing. But it seems like through the years they have just become a little bit better than they were as we were describing them in the beginning of our story of Joseph. And so they're going home, and you can just imagine what they probably couldn't wait to get back to Jacob and tell him about how they were treated and how kind. In fact, you can imagine them thinking, you know, when we run out of food, no problem. If we run out of food again, they don't know, of course, how long the famine is going to be. But if it were to be prolonged and we run out of food again, that's no problem at all. We just go back to our friend there in Egypt, and he'll surely give us more food, no problem. So everything's great. But as I said, that didn't last very long at all, because Joseph had called his his steward to him and said, "Now this is what you do. You fill their sacks again with as much food as it will carry and put their money back in." It's kind of interesting, a couple of things about that even after they're overtaken and the money is discovered as they're looking for the cup, nothing really is said about that. That nothing comes of that at all, other than the fact that it's there. And so that's sort of interesting. They you know, the first, what was their reaction the first time they saw the money back there? Right, they were scared to death about that. Like, that just messed everything up. That was the primary reason why Jacob wouldn't send Benjamin back in the beginning, after they discovered all the money was back. But it kind of goes unnoticed, really, this time around. And it's interesting, you know, how would you view, what would you think? I don't know exactly what the procedure was in those days. But you would have thought that someone, maybe Judah, he seems to have becoming the leader now, or Reuben, the oldest perhaps, would have had the money, and they come and buy the food and then go on back home. But the language makes it pretty clear that each man had his own money. And that was true the first time. I just never really paid much attention to that. But all the money, every man had his money put back in his sack. So they all got there and bought, used their own money and bought. You know, why was that? I don't know. It's not never ever explained or anything. But that's interesting that was the procedure that they had. But anyway, so Joseph gets his steward and says, "You put all the food there, you put the money back, but you put the silver cup, the cup of divination, into the youngest one's sack. And after they get out of town just a little bit, you go and overtake them. And you harshly say, why did you repay evil or repay evil for good?" Speak harshly to him, and that's exactly what he did. And anybody remember what was their reaction when the steward overtook him and spoke to him and said exactly what Joseph told him to say? What was their initial response? Huh? They were what? I'm sorry. Well, no. Yeah, I mean, when the steward said, you know, just confronted them and was harsh, did they, I can't. We do need mics in here, huh? Not because you all can't hear me. I can't hear you. Okay. Right. Well, okay. Yeah, that came. Yeah, right at first when they heard it, immediately they were shocked. In fact, they were no doubt surprised just by the fact that, you know, they're going home, and again they're overjoyed with what's going on, and they were no doubt surprised. Why is this steward and his men coming after us? That probably even surprised them. But when he stopped them and told them what Joseph said, they right away, no, that can't be. We don't know why you're saying these things to us. Because they're really shocked by the whole situation. And so then their response is, "Listen, you go ahead and check our sacks." And they were so confident that they wouldn't find anything that they said, if you find it, whoever you find it with, you, that person be put to death, and the rest of us will become slaves to you, to Pharaoh and to the ruler over there. Will become his servants. And so they had to be pretty confident, weren't they? They had to know. They had to have confidence in each other that none of them had secretly taken that cup. Because again, not only was the one with whom it was found would be put to death, all of them would become slaves in Egypt. And so they really had to have confidence. And then they started to, the steward agreed to that, only he lessened that. He didn't say that he was going to do it. They weren't going to kill anyone. In fact, he said, "No, we'll just take whoever we find it with. We'll take him, make him. He'll become a slave, and the rest of you be innocent. The rest of you, in other words, you just go on home." And so they start at, they start searching. They start with the oldest, go down to the youngest. And again, showing they had that understanding of even the order of their age. And you can see them, no doubt, getting more confident with every one, every bag, every sack that's empty, as they expected. It's not there. See, we told you, it's not there. It's not there. And they get all the way down to Benjamin, and there it is. And that's when they tore their clothes. Because, I mean, that tearing of their clothes was significant. What did that say? When you read that, what did you think about? What was their attitude then? Right. Yes. Yes. Right. It shows you it is a sorrow. It is a grieving situation. They're distraught. It just shows. But doesn't that say something about their love both for Benjamin? And, you know, they would very quickly put together the whole situation. They know, all right, like you said, that Benjamin is in trouble. And now they're going to take him back, make him a slave. What's that going to do to Jacob? Right. They say he's going to die from a broken heart, isn't he? Jacob told them he would go down to Sheol if Benjamin didn't come back. And that really, again, you talk about the growth of these brothers, and this is what this whole thing is all about from Joseph's standpoint. He is trying to determine if these men can be trusted now, if they're the same men that they used to be. And it's clear that Joseph has never stopped loving them. It's really remarkable. It shows us how, really what we ought to be. Like even you can make the application, use the principle at least of brethren. Do brethren ever disappoint us? I bet a brother's never thrown you in a pit, has he? But brothers do disappoint us sometimes and sin against us. And we have sinned against others. And we need to learn from Joseph. He did not hold a grudge. But he certainly didn't allow that terrible situation to cause him to stop loving his family. He never did. And that is very clear throughout all of this. And so we definitely can learn something from Joseph along those lines. But again, they have changed. Because that tearing of their clothes, you don't just do that. They're really grieving. They're worried about Jacob. What's going to happen to him when we don't come back with Benjamin? And then what do they do next then? After they tear their clothes, and what do they do? What do they do? Huh? Right. They load up their donkeys and they go back to the city. Didn't you have to do that? Like, this was exactly the time, if they hadn't changed at all, that they say, man, that's a terrible situation, Benjamin. We'll see you. And because if they were ever going to forsake him, then that would have been the time to do it. Because the steward is saying, listen, we're going to take the one with whom the cup is found, and the rest of you, you're innocent. You go. And isn't it remarkable that none of them, like it could have been, it wouldn't have been strange if a few of them said, no, let's load up our, we're not going to leave Benjamin. But when you have that many men, it wouldn't have been unusual for one or two of them to say, man, that's terrible. Now I'm going back to Canaan. But they didn't. They all stood together. The family is united. And that, you know, that says something about, remember, when we first started getting into all of this, what a broken family they were. A family of chaos. And the last thing you seem to see with them is brotherly love. The family, you remember, we spent a couple weeks on that. They were just a mess. Now they're united. They're standing united. with regard to this. And so they all together load their donkeys and they go back to Egypt. And when they get there, Joseph is there. They didn't know, you know, Joseph's a busy man. He's second in command to all of Egypt. They didn't know, but that they would have to get there and wait for who knows how long before they could ever see Joseph again. And of course, you know, they don't think of him as Joseph, but this ruler, but he's there. And so what did they do? If you read the story, were they right when they saw Joseph, what did they do? Right. They fell down. And that's the third time now that we see them again bowing before Joseph. Has the dream come to fruition? Yes. And they prostrate themselves now this time. Was Joseph impressed by that? Well, right. That's kind of a trick question, because all of this would be impressive to Joseph. He just can't let them know. Like, he's probably impressed just at their very appearance. The very fact that they have come back all together. All of this is making statements to Joseph, because he's testing them. And this really is the final test that he's giving them. He still has to figure out, how are they treating Benjamin? And, you know, are they treating him the way they treated me? And so here they are coming, all of them coming in defense of Benjamin all together. And when he sees them all coming back together, you don't think that moved him? But he still has to play the part. And so he basically, as we look at this down at verse 14, let's pick up way down there, Genesis 44. When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there, and they fell before him to the ground. Joseph said to them, "What deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination?" Did it say he was practicing divination? No. And it's amazing, the commentaries all over the place with this. But there's no evidence that he actually did that. And unless you can prove to me that he did, I'm saying he didn't. you think about this, that again, I don't know if I explained it to you, but that cup of divination there, they would do all kinds of things with that, but you were to conjure up basically spirits, and mostly evil spirits, to do whatever you wanted them to do. And there were just a lot of different kind of things, from putting stones in there and seeing how they will be organized within the water, within the liquid that you put them in, and just different things that they would do. But it was all that sort of thing of conjuring up spirits. You can't convince me that Joseph was doing that sort of thing. But he, again, is playing the part. But he doesn't have the cup. So he's basically saying to them, why would you do this, knowing that I would discover a man like me who has this power, that he could discover it. I could discover it. Why would you think you could get away with this sort of thing? And so he's really continuing to try to frighten them, is what he's doing. And Judah, now verse 16 then, it says, "And Judah said, what should we say to my Lord? And what shall we speak? Or how can we clear ourselves?" Now, this begins, Judah, again, he's stepping forward as the leader. And so he gives this speech here, and it's the longest speech that any human makes in the entire book of Genesis. And it's amazing when you read from things of the past of how people view this speech that he's about to give. It is, I mean, it's just amazing. People think it is the greatest piece of Hebrew literature that has ever been written. And it's just glowing with praise of the nature of it. But one thing it does do is it really begins to show us that these brothers have changed and it really have even repented of the past and what they did to Joseph. And it's really a remarkable thing, just the attitude, and especially Judah, of all people. You remember Judah, he's the one that when the caravan was coming, he said, oh, well, why should we kill our brother? And you know, he after all, he is our flesh, but let's sell him. And, you know, we can get something. At least we can get something for him. And so that was Judah. But now he has really changed. And we see that in this speech. And he's very humble. He said, Judah said, what shall we say to my Lord, or what shall we speak? And notice he understands, he's starting to understand that all of this was happening as a discipline for their previous sin. He said, God has found out the guilt of your servants. Is he talking about taking that cup? No, he's not talking about that cup at all. He's talking about Joseph. And so now they understand again. This is the second time really that they have referred to themselves as guilty. And that's great progress. Because I mean, what, you know, the first step towards repentance is understanding guilt and admitting to guilt. And now they're putting God in this, thinking all of this is happening to us because our sin has found us out. Our guilt, God is punishing us for this. And that says something about their spirituality, really. And so he says, God has found out the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and he also, in whose hand the cup has been found. So they're there to become their slave. What Judah wants in the end, as we go through this speech, is to take the place of Benjamin. But what's great about this is that Judah he really doesn't make a defense. And you know he knows, and they believe anyway, that they're completely innocent in all of this. But he didn't talk about that. His main focus is, we were guilty before. We did a terrible thing to Joseph, and God has found it out, and that's why we're in this mess. And he leaves it at that, and that again, that shows a great deal of piety on his part. And so you could see him just trying to convince Joseph, no, there had to be a mistake. Someone put that into Benjamin's sack. He would never do that. He didn't do any of that. And so he says, but he said, far be it from me that I should do so. He said, only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. Did I skip a verse there? The end of verse 16, maybe. Let's see here. We are my Lord's. Okay, yes, I did read that. But Joseph is saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to make all of you my servants. It's just going to be the one who had the cup. That's it. Now, the problem is that was Benjamin, and he was the last one they wanted that to happen to. And so this is where, again, the love of Judah and the concern he has for Benjamin comes into play. Judah went up to him and said, oh, my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's ears. Can you imagine that? He doesn't know who Joseph is. This is a powerful man. He approaches him. A lot of times in those kind of cultures and those kind, when someone's in that kind of, has that kind of power, it's very rare to walk right up on them like that. But that's what it sounds like when you read this, that Judah, you know, he got right up to him, and that's why he goes on to say, let not your anger burn against your servant, for you are like Pharaoh himself. My Lord asked his servant, saying, have you a father or a brother? And And we said to my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a young brother, the child of his old age. His brother is dead. So we know, and that, again, is not the first time that they suggested that, but we know they really think that Joseph is dead. I mean, clearly, that they feel that. You know, why? I years have passed. They probably thought he just didn't survive his time in Egypt. But they believe that he is dead. And so he says, and he alone, that is Benjamin, he alone is left of his mother's children. And his father loves him. You think they know a little something about that favoritism there? They know it. But again, no resentment at all, it doesn't appear. But his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, the boy cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father, his father would die. And so they recognize that. And then that's what Jacob told him. And then you said to your servant, unless your younger brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face again. When we went back to your servant, my father, notice how many times, almost every time he speaks, it's always servant. I'm your servant. Even Jacob, he's your servant. And so they're being very respectful and humble. But he doesn't realize every time he refers to his father, that's pulling on the heartstrings of Joseph. Like, how would they know that? But it is. Yeah, this is all a very emotional thing to Joseph. He said, and when our father said, go again and buy us a little food, we said, we cannot go down. If our youngest brother goes with us, then we will go down, for we cannot see the man's face unless our father, our youngest brother is with us. And then your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One left me, and I said, surely he has been torn to pieces, and I have never seen him since. And if you take this one also from me, and harm happens to him, he will bring down my gray hairs in evil to Sheol. So again, just repeating what Jacob said to them. Now, therefore, as soon as I come to you, your servant, my father, and the boy is not with me, then his life will be bound up. Then his life is as his life is bound up in the boy's life. As soon as he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die. And your servant will bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrows to Sheol. So again, this is just the same thing, but you can tell they've changed. They didn't care about Jacob hardly at all, it doesn't seem. Maybe there's more to it under the surface. But when they went back and took that coat of many colors, dipped it in blood, and gave it back to him, did it feel to you like they had any concern about Jacob's feelings at all? Not at all. But now, that's all that's on Judah's mind. And he's kind of the spokesman, remember. There's no reason for us not to conclude that they don't all feel the same way. They desperately want him to let Benjamin go because they love Benjamin, and they know if they go back home without him, it is just going to kill Jacob. And so, again, that shows a lot of love, a lot of sympathy that they have. Now watch this. For your servant became a pledge of safety for the boy to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. So now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as servant to my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. Now, that shows you something right there. Like, it's one thing to talk about something. It's something altogether different to carry it out. Judah is showing he wants to carry this out. Let's just make a swap. You let Benjamin go, and I'll be your servant. You let him and the brothers go back to my father. And so he's willing to be, instead of Benjamin, to be a slave in Egypt for all the rest of his life. That's more than just talk, isn't it? I mean, this is it. He's standing before this ruler, and if this ruler were to accept that, that would be it. You don't say something like that unless you mean it. And so Judah, he has really come a long way. And he does love Benjamin, and he loves Jacob, and he's demonstrating that here in this way. But do you think all of this is having an impact upon Joseph? He's learning this is what it's all about. He's been trying in all of these tests that he's been given to his brothers, sending them back the first time and putting the money back in and all of that. And all of this is to see, have they changed? And right here, he's learning they have changed. They care for my little brother. They're not abusing him in any way. They do regret how they treated me all those years ago. He's figuring all of this out. And so we get into chapter 45. And, you know, again, same old thing with the chapter breaks. They don't really need to be there here. But in chapter 45, then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by. He cried, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. So he gets rid of everyone. Now, you remember when he came after he had incarcerated them for 3 days, then he came back and kind of gave them a more private kind of speech and told them, I fear the same God that you fear. But was he completely alone with them even at that time? Why do we know? Why would we? We're not told specifically, but why would we conclude he wasn't alone? Huh? No, it wouldn't be. I mean, perhaps, but it was because he has never, in this whole time, he hasn't talked to them in Hebrew. Because he's an Egyptian, right? So how did he communicate with them? He had a translator. So even back then, after that 3 days incarceration, he goes back and it definitely more alone. But he had someone translating for him. This time, he sends everybody out. And for the very first time, he begins to speak to them in their own language. And right when he does that, how do you think they felt? I mean, here he is and he tells everyone to go. I mean, this is real life. Let's not forget. This is not made up stuff. This is real life. And so Judah has just poured out his heart to him. And right away, he tells everyone, leave the room. Everybody, even the interpreter, everyone has to go. And he starts to speak to them in Hebrew. What do you think would go through their mind right then? Boy, this is more bizarre than last time. Here. They would that would shock them. But just immediately, they didn't have time to be shocked very long, because this is, again, when he makes himself known. Before he does, now watch this, verse 2. And he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. Now, that's the ESV. ESV makes it sound like, boy, he just really started howling. And all the way to Joseph's house, that's not what it's saying. It's saying that the Egyptians that he just sent out, they heard him crying. Like, it wasn't just shedding a few tears. He was crying aloud enough for the Egyptians to hear. And then that very quickly spread to Pharaoh's house. Not like Pharaoh heard it himself, but he heard of it. I think some translations even say. But how did the brothers feel about that? This second in command, he sends everyone out and he just starts crying. You know, all that, even that really would be kind of scary. Like, he's coming unhinged. our fate is in his hands. But again, it all happens rather quickly, because verse 3, it says, "And Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph." And then he says, "Is my father still alive?" You stop and think about that. That right there is one of the most dramatic things you'll ever read, even in the Bible. I mean, really, it's something, the emotion, you can't really put it into words. You just can feel it. You just have to imagine it yourself. That him saying to his brothers in their tongue, in the Hebrew tongue, "I am Joseph." And right away, it's not, "How's the old man doing back home? Is my father well?" Can you imagine? Can you imagine that? How do they respond right away? They're dismayed. What kind of trick is this? Why would this, that's diabolical. Why would he pretend to be Joseph? You know, right at this first split second, that they would automatically, "Oh, it's Joseph." He just spoke in Hebrews. He's claiming to be Joseph. And so, you know, their emotions are all over the place. And we'll see here as we pick up, that's second bell, but we pick up that they start putting this together and they're terrified. This is the one we threw in the pit. He has all this power and he has to comfort them. But what an emotional scene that really is. It's just amazing. We'll pick up there and see what he does there next week.